Live from the 6th and Peabody Studio and across the OutKick Network, this is OutKick 360 with Jonathan Hutton, Chad Withrow, and Paul Kuharski.
Out of the gates and ready to go. OutKick 360 underway. Thursday edition is here, and that means a ton of football discussion. SEC, NFL, and all the periphery. From 6th and Peabody with Yeehaw Beer and Old Smoky Moonshine. The crew's all here as well. Big show planned. Trey Wallace joins us from OutKick.com. SEC headlines in 20 minutes as we get set for every practice to begin. LSU started theirs today, for instance. There are plenty of storylines from the Southeastern Conference. Amy Dash, the Odyssey legal analyst and the founder of League of Justice, she will be with us in an hour as we will go through the top bullet points to follow, as now we know the NFL will appeal the suspension of Deshaun Watson. What happens next? What's the likelihood of a lawsuit, of an injunction? What would that take from an outside court to allow him to play? We'll get through all of those details with Amy. That's coming up at the next hour. Armando Salguero is on the show. There's preseason football, and he wrote a love letter to it. At OutKick, we will ask him about that. Scott Dixon from IndyCar, six-time champ, in studio with us in the final hour. Gentlemen, good afternoon.
Looking forward to our show today. Really looking forward to talking with Amy Dash, not just about Deshaun Watson, but now you've got members of the LIV Tour suing the PGA over antitrust violations, with them banning them from the tour. So we'll ask about the validity of that lawsuit and what could happen with all of that. So perfect day to have her on. Perfect, always perfect to have Armando and Trey on talking football. And it is crazy. As you guys know, I have the Today Show on at times in the morning as I'm eating breakfast and getting ready. It comes on at 7 a.m. I'm up and ready to go. It starts, and one of the top stories was the NBC football music, and football is back tonight with a preseason game. And I got to be honest, did not really know that until it happened, because I've not been anticipating the preseason as much as Armando Salguero has been anticipating preseason games.
I'm driven crazy by the football's back. Football is back on the Thursday before September 11th. This is sub-football, if you will.
Well, sub-NFL football.
Yeah. I got a text by a previous guest of our show that has me feeling a little down. One Faith Kuharski, mom, who she wasn't even critiquing the show. She was critiquing pictures she saw, like thumbnails of a show, where I was wearing evidently a dark polo. And this could have been, I think, from a while ago, because I've lost weight, where she said my neck looked very fat and I should be more conscious of what I'm wearing. And then she read some comments evidently on a show where somebody was accusing you of something, Chad, and she was, of course, taking these comments at face value. I told her, do not read the comments. These people have no idea what they're talking about.
Was said was probably true. Yeah,
don't read the comments.
Whatever I was accused of is probably true, to be fair to Faith.
Please,
she's a great judge of character.
Please look at pictures from yesterday's show or from the site. In my site, where there's a picture of me yesterday, I'm looking good, but I'm going to sit very tall today and elongate my neck. I wore a light shirt.
Wow.
Here's what I want you to do. You do you. Don't even let the comments of your mother try to get you to stand up taller or change the position of your chair.
I mean, I've been working hard.
Stick your neck out
well
more and try to fool the camera. No one cares how we look. I'm going to let everyone in on a little secret. The secret to this show's success has nothing to do with how we look. And all three of us look terrific, but that's beside the point. It has nothing to do with how we look. It's about the content of this show every single day, and that we're going to bring it every single day. That's why people listen. That's why people watch. All due respect to Faith Kuharski, who's not a viewer or listener of this show, who's simply looking at thumbnails. Her opinion does not matter. And nor should it affect you, Paul. And also,
it
is very odd to me, because most moms, and my mom,
always
would take the opposite take.
Yeah. You look terrific.
Very honest.
When I was legitimately fat, my mom would claim I was skinny. Like, tell me that.
Hey,
your hair doesn't look good. I don't like it like that, or something along those lines. But typically mothers are always much quicker to, you know, their baby can't do wrong and always looks great. So I'm shocked that she came at you with that.
She got nobody to talk to anymore with my dad kind of in a bottle. You know, you remember the running back Harvey Williams?
Yes.
He played for the 95 Raiders. Did he go to Oklahoma maybe?
That sounds
maybe
right.
Maybe a Texas school. He had very long neck. So I'm trying to look
like Davis
like
Mills.
Harvey Williams. Yeah.
We can talk about Davis Mills
to motivate my posture.
Oh, Davis Mills has a famously long neck.
Yeah.
But is it muscular at all? Because mine's not muscular. I just want it to be long. I want picture a string coming out of the top of your head like the posture people tell you.
He went to LSU. He's from Texas, Harvey Williams, by the way. So
okay.
Just look that up. Davis Mills went to Stanford, and he has a long neck. I do know that. Paul, you look great.
Thank you.
I would not take any of those notes. This is, you know,
she's very far removed from the
We're like showrunners that have created something, and we're going to get notes from different people. I would be very selective on which notes you receive. I would discard those notes.
Well, I told
with
her
all
to
due
disregard
respect to Faith
comments.
Kowarski, who is a lovely woman.
Yes, and she was a great guest when we had her in.
Yes.
But she's past those years where she would be an acceptable guest, I think.
The critiques will, they're,
there's
they're,
my reverse
they're
critique.
Even and thorough from her. So,
yeah.
You know, we've all three received good and bad.
I've passed
it's
the
true.
Point of
it's true. I've come in with them.
I'm past the point of trying to fool any cameras. I am what I am. You're going to get what you're going to get every day. There's nothing else going on. I'm not checking myself before the show comes on. I'm doing nothing to prepare other than putting on a somewhat decent shirt most days.
We
can't get any better than this.
In our contract, we have Jacob. He has to put an Instagram filter on the feed you're seeing right now to make it look better for us. We're so self-conscious.
Thanks for blowing that secret.
I know. Hit us up on Twitter at OutKick360.
Jacob does a great job with his editing. That's for sure.
Yes. By the way, the Hall of Fame game tonight, we'll touch on this later with the storylines. There are some decent storylines, at least early on. Trayvon Walker is one to watch tonight. First overall pick for the Jacksonville Jaguars against number two offensive lineman.
Will they talk about him?
They
have to.
Yeah.
Got no choice.
But I admit I'm intrigued to see that because we didn't see much of him in college.
No.
So we're finally seeing him in pads other than what's been a full padded practice in Jacksonville. We're finally seeing him in pads for the first time since he's been talked about as the best overall athlete out of the draft, which they gave him that honor. He's on the field tonight. Plus, I don't bet on these games, preseason games. Many of you do, especially the first one. If you were looking away to lean, I would lean towards Vegas with the Raiders because of the quarterback play. Jarrett Stidham played for 3 years within this offense that he's now in Vegas. So just on that alone, and the fact that Trevor Lawrence isn't playing at all, I'm leaning towards the Raiders. But who knows here with any of this?
Well, another thing to watch tonight is it is the debut of a new broadcast team for NBC. No more Al Michaels. It's Mike Tirico. Melissa Stark comes in on the sideline also. So Mike Tirico, Chris Collinsworth, Melissa Stark, a sideline reporter, makes their debut tonight in a early preseason game.
Yeah, and
they're making their start. Tirico's done playoff games and things in the past.
He's filled in for Al Michaels before a couple of times.
This is the first one with those three, now adding Melissa Stark as well.
They'll be excellent. I have no worries about that booth. Of all the changes that have gone around all of football, NBC to me is in perfectly fine shape.
Yes. We will hit more NFL discussion in coming up. Plus, we've got SEC headlines. Brittany Griner today came across this morning, 9-year sentence in Russia. The discussion is with this that they put 9 years on it as another negotiating tactic of sorts. But still, for what she was detained for at the airport to what this ended up being, awful isn't the right word. It's more than that, but it's terrible.
Yeah, it's preposterous. I got a friend or two who said, you know, hey, she broke the law over there. Well, first off, the law over there is ridiculous. Secondly, it doesn't matter when a U.S. citizen is being detained somewhere for, you know, their law, which is ridiculous as it compares to common sense law, you got to go get that person back, whether there's a profile to it or not. you know, if she was a no name, it probably wouldn't be getting attention. So it's good. I don't know if she would have been detained though if she was a no name either. Yeah, they got to put an end to this.
The other guy that they're trying to get back. I mean, I haven't kept up with that. I mean, his name was familiar, but I mean, again, like
you're never a former Marine. He's a Marine,
right?
A retired Marine, I guess, that was charged with espionage while in Russia. Honestly, no clue if he's actually a spy or not for the United States. Who knows? Could have been an American over there that got tied up into something, or they falsely accused, and he's in prison. The weird thing about the proposed trade is it's an arms dealer that Russia's wanting back. It's a two-for-one trade.
Yeah,
America would give Brittany Griner and this. So I look at it and think it may not be the worst trade if this guy was actually an American spy that they're sending back. If he's some dude that was in Moscow on vacation that used to be in the Marines that they suspected of being a spy, and he's just a civilian, while that's terrible and even worse that he's over there in this situation, that's not an even trade to send back the biggest arms dealer in the world to Russia. So it's a tricky situation. I don't know, guys, how they have pro women's league still in Russia, and that's where Brittany Griner was going.
Yeah.
And they can make a lot of money over there. I don't know how you go to Russia right now if you are an American and play in one of those leagues unless you're going to make 10 times what you make in the States.
I don't think anybody's going anymore.
But unless you had the perfect setup where you were insulated by your team and protected by them and the ownership, and you just kept your head down and didn't do much but play the game and then go back to your apartment, I would not want to be in that country right now because you could get taken for anything.
And it seems she didn't get out quickly enough. Maybe there was no getting out quickly enough. And then when you're getting out in that circumstance, you have to be, you know, totally careful and safe. She didn't do it without failures of judgment, but that doesn't mean she should be in prison for any period of time or facing what she's facing now.
No, there's nothing that she's done that would warrant 9 years in a Russian prison.
Or however many months she's been detained.
Right. But it's a difficult situation all around, because everyone should look at that and say, she should be back in the United States. That's what's right for what she was caught with on a plane. And the punishment does not equal the crime at all in this situation. But there's also zero goodwill right now between the two countries. So there's not going to be an amicable, some sort of agreement that's going to be balanced on both sides with this, with the outcome. And that's the scary part.
And she pled guilty. She pleaded guilty back in July. Early July, just after July 4th, in fact, is when we came in and discussed
about it. About a month ago.
And she did that to speed this process up. So now you've got the verdict and penalty handed down. So hopefully this speeds up a bit. She's been over there for 24 weeks, detained for 24 weeks, I should say. So, you know, that's our hope, is that it's the 9 years tacked on as the bargaining chip here and not the final judgment.
Well, we're going by...
Someone
on YouTube commenting on the show, but William says the arms dealer, by the way, is set to be let free in 2028 as an FYI. So getting a 6-year head start on that. Well, that's important. You know, it's not a lifetime sentence for this arms dealer. So when factoring if the trade should be made or not, we should note that.
That makes
it
sound a little bit more fair.
Yes, absolutely.
We discuss SEC headlines coming up. Practices opening across the conference. Trey Wallace has been following those headlines for you, and we'll ask and discuss the big topics next on Outkick 360. First, though, Aurora Nutrascience, VitaLifeScience.com is the website for the best supplements for you. Aurora Nutrascience helps you stay mentally sharp and healthy by delivering supplements where you need them the most, your body. You take these supplements and they stay there. You're not wasting them like a typical capsule or pill. And Outkick 360 season ticket holders listening right now, you receive a 15% discount with the code OUTKICK360 at VitaLifeScience.com, VIDALifeScience.com. Typical pills, capsules, not well absorbed. But here's Aurora, unique, cutting-edge, nutritional, and absorbable supplements encapsulated in liposomes that ensure greater absorption in the body's bloodstream. I use their vitamin C, their vitamin D3, and glutathione. Simple single-use package you can grab and go with in the mornings. And they also help you if you're a weekend warrior, if you take medication for high cholesterol, so many other benefits at VitaLifeScience.com. 15% off with the code OutKick360 at Vita, V-I-D-A, LifeScience.com. Armando Salguero joins us in an hour. We will discuss NFL training camps, practice underway across the SEC as well. Outkick 360 rolls on from 6th and Peabody in Nashville, Tennessee with Chad Withrow and Paul Koharski. I'm Jonathan Hutton, joined by Trey Wallace of Outkick.com, covers the SEC for our site. And Trey, there is a lot to get to today as we can now see the sunrise for the season on the horizon. How you doing, man?
Man, I'm good. I'm excited that things are going on, that we've got some college football, that we are 3 weeks away from Vanderbilt traveling to Hawaii, which is a game that I have put in for to travel and cover. We'll see if that actually works or not. Look, it's exciting times. You've got teams starting up today. You've got press conferences going on. You've got arrests being made in Auburn. Just a lot of stuff in college football happening.
So let's start with the arrest. What happened with TJ Finley? And did you see the Harsin awkward promo that he was filming for the Jumbotron?
Yeah, I saw the promo. That was kind of cringeworthy. It was kind of like Butch Jones cringeworthy.
For those that don't know, he's in front of a green screen and he's doing the same take in different poses with a football, pointing at Auburn.
He's saying
fans.
Like Auburn family or Auburn Nation, let's ride.
Let's ride.
And he's doing different takes, so it's yeah. Auburn Nation, let's ride. Auburn Nation, let's ride. So over and it's over, like when you're seeing it, who puts those things out there? Like, I see that, I'm like, someone in the Auburn department is trying to make him look like a fool when they post that publicly.
That's not surprising.
You could do that to anyone. We could be shooting a promo here and look like an idiot if someone's filming it from the side and we're doing 8 different takes of it. Very, very odd to me in a number of ways.
The problem is you've got somebody that's probably some intern or whatnot sitting there filming it while they're doing it, and then he's tweeting it or putting it out somewhere, and then everybody's picking it up. Like, it's not going to be hard to figure out, you know, who the person was that put out the video. It reminded me of that. Y'all remember that crazy Muschamp thing that happened where he was doing a promo, but then they did like an outtake and he told everybody they can go F themselves?
Yes, yes. I love that. Yeah, it was for South Carolina season tickets.
Yeah, it was beautiful. See, we love these kind of outtakes. Give us some stuff behind the scenes. Maybe it won't be cringeworthy, but if we get something like Muschamp, I'll take it.
Let's stay at Auburn with TJ Finley, because he made history as the first college football player to ink an NIL deal with Amazon. He's selling shirts and sweatshirts and phone cases and other things with Amazon. But he's been arrested for not wearing a helmet on a scooter. Is that right?
Well, he got booked for eluding police. I was talking with a few people from down in Auburn before I came on. And so from what I am told, that him and they figured out that he had an arrest warrant out for him. And it stemmed from that citation where he was riding a moped without a helmet.
Okay.
Now, you know, was he trying to elude the police before? And he's like, well, wait a minute, I'm on a moped. This probably is not going to get me far since I'm 6'7" and 317 pounds. Or was it something where, you know, they either added a charge or something to it? But he found out that there was a warrant. So him and his attorney, whoever was assigned to him, went down to the police station and he got booked on that charge. Now he is back at, I am told he's in the Auburn facility. Not a good sign. I mean, you go down there and you're thinking you're doing something, then all of a sudden you're getting booked into the detention center, mugshots being put out, you're having to bond out. Brian Harsin is going to be speaking to the media here in about 45 minutes, if I'm not mistaken. So, you know, maybe something will come out of that. But honestly, I think it's going to be much to do about nothing, but yeah. It could hurt him. But it could hurt him, Jonathan, with his NIL deal that he just signed with Amazon. Like, you don't want that type of look. I mean, I just wrote the article yesterday, and all of a sudden he's getting arrested. So, you know, not a good start to Auburn's fall camp, which started today.
Is it pathetic or brilliant that South Carolina is selling football season tickets at Costco in the greater Columbia, South Carolina area? Is it $89 for a season ticket in the upper deck also? Okay.
So here's what it is. First off, I think it's brilliant marketing to do this in a Costco. I think it's smart because you're just walking down the aisle. It's like, honey, you know, let's get some Frosted Mini Wheats. Let's get some Cheerios. By the way, let's get some tickets to South Carolina football. Look at them. They're right there. So I think that's smart. It is. So what it is it's two tickets. And you have to pick a game that you want to go to. So it's not season tickets. So what it is you can pick from two out-of-conference games, which are horrible. It's like South Carolina State, I think Georgia State, which that might be an interesting game to go to. Tennessee fans have a horrible memory of that. But then you could also pick from Missouri, Tennessee, and Texas A&M. So it's actually a really good deal. And it's actually pretty smart. Like, you can buy for $89 – you get a parking pass, two vouchers for all-you-can-eat concessions, and you get to pick from going to watch South Carolina play Texas A&M, Tennessee, or if you want to, go watch them play Missouri. Like, this is a very smart idea, and this is not the first team that did it. You know, Louisville did this. They announced this last month. You know, they were selling packages and stuff like that at Costco as well. But for South Carolina to get into it, I think it's very interesting because it's a Southeastern Conference, but there is a growing trend, Chad, along and in college football, SEC, Big Ten, everywhere, where you're starting to see a lot of these tickets that they're having to get rid of because they can't sell them all. I mean, there was countless times I went to Tuscaloosa last year or Knoxville or Athens or whatnot, and, you know, like the visitor allotment section is kind of empty because they can't sell those tickets that schools give back, or they can't sell like the upper deck tickets, you know, when they have a couple thousand that are left over. So I think it's smart. I think where South Carolina maybe doesn't take as much of a hit as maybe they thought they would when it comes to tickets. Hey, let's put them in a major retail store and catch people off guard.
Well, let's stick with the ticket sales theme. Did I read this correctly that Tennessee had the biggest uptick in season ticket sales in its history with over 17,000 new season ticket holders this year. Is that correct?
So I think it was history. Percentage wise, yes, it was.
Okay.
So you look at it, and so at first they had put out a bunch of season tickets for sale, and they put them at a price that just the value wasn't there for people to buy them. And I've talked to a couple season ticket holders who are in this spot. They ended up lowering the price a little bit, and you had more people start jumping in once they started seeing that. I'm not here to knock Danny White and Tennessee for what they were doing. I just think they overpriced it first. And then they're like, okay, wait a minute. People aren't coming in at this, but we still need to sell these tickets and make some kind of profit. So let's lower it a little bit, which is exactly what they did. And you come out and, you know, you're upwards around 58,000 season tickets sold, which is big for a program like Tennessee. And I'll say this about Tennessee. No matter what the season is, who the coach is, you know, it's always optimism going into it. So they're going to buy this stuff if it's presented to them. And, you know, especially when you're adding a new upper deck club area where you can just hang out, you know, and stand if you want to, and you got new West Club seats. So good on Tennessee for selling tickets, and it just shows you, man, give Tennessee fans a little bit of optimism, they're going to buy right in, which is good.
After Alabama bottomed out last year with the SEC championship and a national runner-up, how do you think this massive rebuild is going?
I think that teams would kill. Fans would kill to have what Nick Saban called a rebuild year. And I look at Alabama, and I don't really think last year was a rebuild. Now, look, I'm not Nick Saban, and I'm not getting paid $10 million a year to coach Alabama. But you look at what they had on that roster when it comes to wide receiver, when it comes to quarterback, offensive line, defensive line, like it just didn't feel like a rebuild. Now you go into this season, there are spots you got to fix. You got to find, you know, who is going to be your main targets at wide receiver. I think they're set at running back with Jahmyr Gibbs from Georgia Tech. I think he's going to be a stud for Alabama. I think they're going to have a pass rushing presence with Will Anderson, who is the scariest defender, in my opinion, in college football, coming off the edge. So, Henry Toa is going to be back at linebacker. You know, hopefully he can cover a slant. But you look at it overall, and I think Alabama is in a spot where they'll be able to contend this year. It's not going to be any type of rebuild. And you look at it going forward, I think, you know, in retrospect, you know, Nick Saban was like, okay, well, maybe there was a few spots we could have been better at. Maybe that's what he calls a rebuild. But they played for a national championship. They won an SEC championship, and they only lost, you know, two games the entire season. So a differential of opinion, I think, when it comes to what Nick Saban's doing, which Kirby Smart, by the way, and I'm writing about this for tomorrow morning, kind of took a shot at today because he was like, somebody asked him about, you know, do you know what a rebuilding year is? And he goes, well, I don't know anything about what a rebuild year. How would I know what a rebuild year is? You know, we're not here to rebuild the team. We're here to continue pushing forward. So kind of interesting from Kirby today, and you kind of knew that was coming.
I found it interesting, Saban saying that, but also I found it, last year, Trey, they were not sharp, Alabama. They were not the sharp team that was really good on penalties, keeping those low, that held onto the football, that would make a good special teams play or miss it. Like we would see just odds and ends throughout every game. And yeah, they lost to Texas A&M and they played for a national title. But Nick Saban's looking at Florida, Auburn, and LSU. All three games they could have lost easily. They hung on and won. They're Alabama. But it's not like they routed their way the way Georgia did to the SEC championship game. This was not your typical Alabama team, even though it was a typical Alabama finish in the SEC.
Yeah, and I agree with you on that point. I do. But I think when you look at Alabama and you look at the blue chip players that they have returning every single year and what they can put in, like maybe it doesn't click, you know, in the first month or so, but you expect that to start flowing in that right direction by October, and then you're full go by yep. November. There were times last year where you're like, wait a minute, what is this football team? Like when they played in College Station and Zach Calzada, you know, led Texas A&M on the drive, you look at the Alabama defense, you're like, wait, what is this? Or even the Auburn game, where it took them to go 99 yards in a span of a minute and a half, you know, to win that football game. There were times last year where we saw weaknesses in Alabama. Saban calls it a rebuild. I call it maybe they got exposed a little bit at some of the positions. So, you know, I think going forward, they're going to be fine. But, yes,
No doubt.
I agree with you that Alabama didn't look like Alabama last year at certain points of the season.
Trey, are you buying the Will Levis hype at Kentucky? And by hype, I mean that he's going to have an incredible statistical season. Kentucky's going to finish second in the East and maybe not challenge Georgia, but finish right behind them in the division. And he's going to be a top 5 or 10 pick in the NFL draft. To me, that's where the hype is right now surrounding Will Levis. Are you buying all of those things?
I don't buy the top 10 pick right now in the NFL draft. He reminds me, and this is, I mean, I wrote about it today, and I'll say it. I mean, he reminds me of Tim Tebow in a sense of how he plays the quarterback position, how physical he is. When it comes to yardage, when it comes to passing yards, you got to think about this too. Man, you got to replace Wandale Robinson, you know, off that team from last year. What is the status right now of Chris Rodriguez, the running back who is going to complement Will Levis? I think Will Levis is a pretty damn good quarterback. I do.
Hey, Trey, quickly, they play Florida in week two, I believe.
Yes.
I'll be shocked if Chris Rodriguez isn't suspended for just that first week. I feel like they're going to find a way to get him back for Florida in week two, and he's going to miss the first game of the season. If they wanted to play heavy-handed, he's going to miss the Florida game also.
Well, here's the awesome thing, too. If they wanted to play heavy-handed, they would already announce the suspension, or they'd already talked about, okay, he's not a part of what's going on, too. I agree with you completely that by the Florida game, when Kentucky gets on a plane and heads to Gainesville, they're going to have their starting running back with them. I just see him running a lot of stadiums over the last couple months and getting back to it is what it is. But you look at, you know, going back to like Will Levis, too, can he be the guy that leads them to some big victories? And I think that we're going to find out week two. And it's easy for me to say that. You know, Florida's going to be coming off a game against Utah, which to me is a toss-up game, if we're being honest with each other. And you look at what Kentucky can do when it comes to their offensive line, their defensive line, how they complement Will Levis. I think there's enough there for them to be good this season. Do I think Kentucky is going to come out and it's going to look like last year with 10 wins and whatnot? I'm having a hard time believing that at the moment, but I think that they have a quarterback that if he can keep himself healthy, that's the other thing too, Chet. This guy will just run over a defender. He doesn't care about sliding. He talked about it yesterday. Well, maybe I'll start to slide. But this is a guy that puts himself out there a lot to potentially get hurt. So you got to make sure he gets through the whole season. But I like Will Levis. I like what he can do for Kentucky. It gives them different options. Do I think he's a top 10 draft pick? Not right now, but I'm not some NFL scout. I'm not an expert. I just watch him every Saturday.
Joe Milton sounded pretty smart when he said, I'm a twisted ankle away from being the starter, flipping his own situation from last year inside out. That sounds even better when it's paired with one report we heard that he was actually connecting on some deep downfield passes and not overshooting and missing the way he did when he was the starter. What have you seen and heard about him?
Yeah, talking with some coaches and some people around Tennessee, Joe Milton looks good. I mean, but, you know, that's the same thing we heard last year, you know. But I think here's the difference between last year's Joe Milton and this year's Joe Milton. Is last year, Josh Heupel and his staff, they threw everything they could at Milton and said, okay, you're going to be our guy. Let's prepare like you're our guy. I think this year it gives Joe Milton an opportunity to learn, to be better. I think he does get in spot duty. Like, I think you're going to see him play against Ball State on that Thursday night, probably in late third quarter, probably the whole fourth quarter. And it does. That is such a smart way to put it. I'm an ankle sprain away from being your starter. You darn right you are. And I think that the relationship that he's built up with him and Hooker, I think that's very key as well. Them going through practice, them working to get better with each other, like, It's not going to be surprising this year if Tennessee has to rely on Joe Milton at some point in some difficult situation. We see how Hendon Hooker plays. You know, does he get hit, scrambling out of the pocket, and has to come out for a couple of plays, or does he twist an ankle, or does something happen that throws Milton in there? And the fact that he is, you know, I know we're only a couple of days into fall camp, but he had a good summer throwing with receivers, I was told. And he's starting off fall camp the right direction. And you know what? For a guy that went through what he did last year, and you know, off the field stuff, and I'm talking about, you know, people talking about how he can't connect on a deep ball, or that his football is still a space, you know, it's just floating around the atmosphere. I think he's handled it the right way, and he came off the right way. So it only benefits him and the Tennessee roster that he continues to push forward and be better.
Trey, could Brian Kelly already have more talent at LSU than he had the previous 5 years at Notre Dame? And if so, how difficult is LSU to predict as they begin practice?
I mean, Jonathan, it's tough. It's tough to predict what LSU is going to do, because you think about LSU and you think about, okay, they had the talent. Like, to me, they had the talent last year. They had the talent, you know, and they won the national championship as well. But to me, when I looked at the roster, when I looked at the production that is coming back, and then you look at the quarterback position and how they're going to roll there, I think Brian Kelly walked into a pretty darn good situation down in Baton Rouge, especially along that defensive line. I think they're going to be really good at running back. I think this is a roster this year that will be able to surprise folks. The problem is we all saw the situations that the Tigers put themselves in last year, where there was so much uncertainty in, with Ed Orgeron as the coach, and they didn't play as well. And there were times where it looked like, you know what, this team had kind of like given up on Ed O. But going forward with Brian Kelly, if he can get – and it's not just Brian Kelly, it's his staff too. If they can get the most out of these players and the guys that he has on the rosters and the guys that he was able to bring in from this recruiting class, maybe you get a little bit extra out of a freshman or two. This is a team that could probably win 7 games, maybe 8, with a bowl game. I mean, you just never know. I mean, they could come out and be flat, and they need, you know, another year to get going down there. But I think with what they have going on at quarterback right now, and especially a running back, maybe they can get something done on offense that a lot of people aren't expecting. And I don't think you would ever think this. Maybe LSU can catch people off guard. I don't know when the last time I've said something like that is.
I think you're right. I mean, they have 4 quarterback options right now, legitimate options that Brian Kelly was discussing. They're on their 4th defensive coordinator in as many years now. So, I mean, they've got the hub, the talent, the nucleus. They've got to find the QB, though, to get it going. Trey Wallace, our QB for SEC coverage at Outkick.com, our SEC columnist, and he joins us on Thursdays. Trey, have a great rest of the day. And enjoy football, man. We'll catch up soon.
Yeah, look forward to it, guys. Enjoy the Grand Prix in Nashville this weekend. And love the coverage y'all are doing. So have a great weekend.
Thanks, Trey. Appreciate it.
Scott Dixon, Indy driver, will be in studio with us in about an hour and a half or so. Coming up, rookie quarterback Malik Willis with the Titans. How has he progressed since he's been drafted by the club, and how's training camp number one going for the rookie QB? We'll tell you next on Outkick 360. Outkick 360, rolls on across the Outkick network. Yesterday we previewed Pittsburgh, and then Kenny Pickett went out and had a great practice, and now everyone's raving about him. Malik Willis here in Nashville, there have been signs of the arm talent and athleticism for sure, but consistency is not a word I would use. He has struggled. That's putting it in a polite way based on the 4 now practices of icing. Paul, you've been out there each day, and... We're very early on in the process here, but there's a reason why he was not a first-round pick in this past NFL draft, and it's apparent.
Yeah, there are some people that want to make a complete judgment on him now, which is crazy. Right. You don't make a complete judgment on a Peyton Manning at this stage, better yet a Malik Willis. So when I offer negative critique, I try to tag on every time, but this is what you would expect from a guy like Malik Willis coming out of a small school, you know, 3 padded practices into his first training camp. Pat O'Hara, the quarterback coach, had some interesting things to say about his development that I thought people would want to hear, so I brought in this audio clip.
Yeah, you know, with young quarterbacks, it's really cool, though, with Malik is he's able to retain information really well. And so his decision-making, which we monitor, has been very good for Rick. And things that he hasn't had to do before relative to working from the pocket, his feet need to catch up with his mind. And it's getting better. It takes time. You know, Malik has a very strong arm and a really cool skill set. But you can't always rely on that all the time. These windows are tight. The geography is different with the hash marks in the program, which is, makes a big difference, in my opinion. So the other thing too is, you know, when you're playing quarterback, the NFL provides protection for quarterbacks much more so than outside of the pocket. When you're in the pocket, which is the tackle box, you're protected in the head and neck area. You're protected from being hit low. You're also protected from being body weight landing on top of you. The tackle has 3 ways of protection for a quarterback. Once you leave the tackle box, the only area you're protected is the head and neck area. So you need to operate outside the pocket, but you need to be able to operate from inside the pocket. Operating outside the pocket is not a problem for Malik.
It sounded as if.
So his feet need to catch up to his mind is an interesting thing for me. He had a terrible one-on-one red zone period today where Tannehill was a Grand Canyon gap between the two of them. Then down at the other end in 7-on-7, I thought he made some quick decisions and found guys in a rhythm. And then again, he was bad. So it's up and down period to period. But again, I would say every time, this is what you'd expect from a guy like this at this stage. And making any broad pronouncements about him now is just foolhardy.
Yeah, and that's why I'm hesitant to bring the type of topic I want to bring, because I want to see him in the preseason before we start asking questions about why they drafted him. But based on what I've seen, he's going to tuck and run a lot in the preseason game.
Yes.
A lot.
Yeah. Read and run.
I don't know how you win the number two job doing that. I don't know how you don't keep three quarterbacks now if he's going to be that developmental. I don't know how you judge receivers now if you have him in the game.
That's
because
totally
I'm anticipating a lot of tucking and running.
That's totally fair. The way you win the number two job, which I don't think he will, is that the number two sucks and can't do a lot either.
Well, let's.
But the number two, they've already expressed their love for because of his study habits.
I expect Logan Woodside to be around.
Let's bring it up because Paul just hit on it. If we're a week and a half in and you say that you don't think he's winning the number two job, that is a massive issue.
Well,
he's competing
here's what
against
say.
Logan Woodside. He's not competing against Trubisky or
Pickett.
No,
I agree. And this is what I would say and where I am on it. If Logan Woodside's the number two and he comes in when Tannehill goes down in the game, what are they going to do? They're going to hand it off, throw short and safe, count on the defense. So if Malik Willis came in, that's the same thing you'd be asking of Willis. Plus, Willis adds the ability to run.
Right.
So he actually sounds better. I don't think his short stuff is going to be significantly worse than Woodside. He gets one or two fewer reads out of it, probably. So I think you're screwed either way, but it's a little bit more dynamic. Fewer reads, but a little bit more dynamic. That's not a huge difference to me. But if you need four games, you're probably safer with Woodside.
He's got to win the backup job. And I say that for this reason. This
so
is no knock on Logan Woodside. He is who he is. There are 100 Logan Woodsides. There is absolutely no fear of Logan Woodside going to do anything if you cut him. I mean, give me a break.
No.
You could draft any MAC quarterback that's got great study habits and is a good locker room guy that can come in with a functional arm and play the role of Logan Woodside as a buddy for the backup quarterback to help prepare. And he's very good at that. I have no doubt.
But
he's
not
going to
be as confused as Willis is going to be.
Right? But, I mean, Willis also may steal you a game because he's got a 50-yard run in there that Logan Woodside's never going to do, even if he is tucking and running too quickly if he gets put in the game. I say that not to say, because you guys have been out there. I have not. But even if he's struggling right now and he runs too much, he has got to develop at least to the point where we're saying this is why they drafted him. He's got to be the backup option ahead of Logan Woodside. That's not a giant leap. That's where he's got to get.
I don't see him running a lot in practice. I see it some on designs. I see a pocket breakdown where he's hanging on to the football trying to read the field,
knowing he's going to get
crushed or he's going to tuck and run. In a live game action.
He did
scenario.
Have an 8-play field goal drive the other day, Hutt, where he only threw one pass. They ran otherwise, and he had two runs that were probably designed.
Today, though, he shows great signs of arm talent. He had a couple rockets across the middle that were beautiful. One touchdown pass in 7-on-7 red zone, in a top end red zone, high red zone. But you know, the 2-minute drill to end practice was just a cluster. Yeah. And look, he's fully capable, if what Pat O'Hara is saying, he's retaining information, of taking a big leap forward once he gets a grasp of this offense. Because Woodside definitely has the benefit of being here for that. But, man, it's got to start happening. And it's going to start happening in preseason and the joint practice.
The one thing is, I don't think he'll break easily mentally. Has a good head on his shoulders.
All fair. We discuss legal issues with Amy Dash next.